Bloomberg Audio Studios. Podcasts, radio, news. You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
We have a lot to talk about today with Brett Bruen, of course, the president and CEO of the Global Situation Room, a longtime diplomat in Republican and Democratic White Houses. I will mention he joins us now at the top of the program here on the Wednesday edition. Brett, it's great to see you. I wanted to ask you, and I'm going to, about the president's decision to turn on weapons for Ukraine, this reversal that we saw this week. But I have to ask you just to start off about trade. What is a 30% tariff on Libya and Iraq mean for those countries? And why are we spending time writing these letters?
Well, I'll tell you what it means, Joe, for businesses, because these are coming out piecemeal. It's like every day, you know, he's pulling out that marker and deciding, you know, where in the world he's going to send a letter off to, as though, you know, we didn't have other forms of communication, as though we didn't have a global strategy. And if you're a business leader, as many on this radio program will be listening as business leaders, look, I'm not just trading with one country or even one region. So the notion that the United States of America doesn't have a trade strategy, that Trump, you know, essentially says, I'm going to put out a letter and that is a trade deal, it's folly, mm-hmm. Joe.
Well, I get where you're coming from on this. The market seems to agree to the point that it's not even paying attention now. And the uncertainty is real. We just extended things once again. But what are we buying from Libya and Iraq that we need to put a 30% tariff on?
Yeah, look, I mean, Iraq, Libya, both oil producing countries. I think the key question here, Joe, is whether or not this new deadline, you know, after we were told that July 9th was going to be a, you know, no budging, no fudging, this was the date, you know, Trump, quite frankly, is making it really hard for businesses, American businesses and American workers to figure out how the heck do I make any plans, because he's, you know, for lack of a better way of describing it, so fixated on the reality program that he is programming instead of understanding what does it take to actually run a business. And, you know, bring up the 50% tariffs on copper. Well, we American companies need copper to build buildings in America, to make products in America. Mm-hmm. So we can't just turn a light switch on and have more capacity to create copper in the U.S.
We're going to talk a little later this hour with Mike McGlone at Bloomberg Intelligence about the copper story. It is pulling back a bit after that huge pop yesterday. Brett, there's uncertainty about trade and there's also uncertainty about geopolitics. That's nothing new, of course. You and I talk about it every time you're on the air. But in this case, there are big questions about the Middle East following our strikes against Iran in cooperation with Israel. Benjamin Netanyahu decided to extend his stay in Washington this week, a second day of meetings with President Trump at the White House, said to be focused on a ceasefire in Gaza. We heard Steve Witkoff talk about it yesterday, a potential 60-day ceasefire, just like Joe Biden was talking about over a year ago. There's also the matter of Iran. And when you see Benjamin Netanyahu two nights in a row showing up at the driveway entrance of the West Wing, so photographers can't see him coming and going, meetings behind closed doors, no readout from the administration. What's going on here?
Well, I think it's interesting because Trump is obviously desperately trying to get a deal, any deal, because none of them have worked out so far, including that ceasefire deal that he negotiated along with Biden's team back in January. And look, I mean, it is also a really challenging environment for Trump just broadly in the Middle East. He made, one might say, the rash, the reckless decision to strike inside Iran, to strike those nuclear facilities. But we don't have a strategy, Joe. What's the strategy, whether it's with Israel, whether it's with Iran? And I think that's leaving a lot of questions, a lot of open space. Obviously, Netanyahu is sticking around to try to figure out some sort of agreement, some sort of announcement that they can put forward to say, well, on Gaza or on Iran, we're going to at least agree to the following principles. But the substance matters too, Joe. As you mentioned, I'm a recovering diplomat, and I haven't seen a whole lot of substance on the table yet.
Interesting. Do you think that there's another strike against Iran being planned right now?
You know, Trump has said he's going to give diplomacy a chance to do its work. This obviously another example, you know, the first one being when Qasem Soleimani was taken out by Trump in his first term, the Iranians really did pull their punches. I think similarly now we're seeing them pull their punches. This is a window. It's what we would call, you know, in diplomatic terms, an opportunity. So if Trump wants to avail himself of that, he ought to, and he ought to see if he can get something close to the old JCPOA, that Iran nuclear deal, with intrusive inspections, with true ability to ensure that Iran isn't going to be able to reconstitute its nuclear program. Now, obviously, Netanyahu's got a different agenda, and he's going to push Trump for a harder line. Hopefully, you know, the U.S. interests prevail in this.
Let's talk about his agenda for Ukraine, because the president is upset with Vladimir Putin, as he made clear in the cabinet meeting yesterday. He's reversed at least someone's decision, apparently Pete Hegseth's decision on weapons for Ukraine. Listen to Donald Trump yesterday.
That was a war that should have never happened, and a lot of people are dying, and it should end. And I don't know, we get a lot of thrown at us by Putin, for you want to know the truth. He's very nice all the time, but it turns out to be meaningless.
Here we go, having to bleep the president of the United States again, Brett. I don't know if that ever happened when you were working in the White House, but talk to me about this decision, what it means for the Secretary of Defense, who, at least you read the tip sheets around here, is on thin ice after making a decision the president did not sign off on.
Yeah, one thing you learn on the National Security Council staff is you got to know what are your authorities, what do you have to coordinate or at least inform others of. And the fact that Hegseth made this, you know, consequential decision, I am cutting off the Ukrainians from these necessary, desperately needed defensive capabilities without even informing the National Security Advisor, who also happens to be the Secretary of State, is just shocking. It's mispractice. And I think Hegseth is going to pay a price for this, because we are now seeing, you know, successive issues when it comes to the safety of, when it comes to the national interest of the United States. You can't continue to make these errors. Obviously, it was embarrassing yesterday in the cabinet room. Trump is essentially dressing him down as he's sitting right next to him. You could see John Ratcliffe, the CIA director, sort of smirking over in behind Hegseth. And at the end of the day, look, Hegseth has made these decisions which are going to embolden Trump, embolden Putin, if he believes that he, you know, with this summer offensive can make inroads, that he can push Trump to pull back on some of those defensive capabilities. But let's hope Trump has, you know, made the call. When I was with him in NATO, he certainly seemed to be supportive of Zelensky and Ukraine's defense.
Brett, it's great to have you back. Brett Bruen, President, CEO, Global Situation Room, with us here on Balance of Power. This is Bloomberg.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
It is the 9th of July. This is when the deals were supposed to be in place. We're now, of course, looking ahead to August with a lot of questions about what these letters are going to lead to.
Yep. August 1st is the date where tariffs will go into effect. The president, at least for now, contending that that date will not change. Yeah. But what could change is the tariff rates countries are facing if they are willing to, in the president's words, lower their tariff and non-tariff barriers and open their markets to the U.S. It's seven new countries that got letters today. The seventh just hit a 30% tariff on Sri Lanka. But of the seven in total we're talking about here, Joe, it equates for less than $20 billion in imports to the United States. So you have to ask what exactly the point is.
That's right. How much we're actually buying from Libya, Iraq, and some of the others here at hand. It's an interesting moment here in this conversation that we're going to talk about ahead with Bloomberg White House correspondent Josh Wingrove. He's been really leading the charge on the tariff coverage here, asking so many questions, Kaylee, in these encounters with the president. It's difficult to get clear answers here. And we'll review some of this with Heather Boucher from the prior administration, economic advisor to former President Joe Biden.
Yeah, interested to hear her thoughts as well on what we heard from President Trump today regarding the Fed chair.
That's right.
Jerome Powell, he believes the current Fed funds rate is about 300 basis points too high. We keep ratcheting that number of the cut needed higher and higher. So we'll get into all of that this hour. But we begin, as always, with the check on the markets. And for that, we turn to Charlie Pellett up in New York. Hey, Charlie.
Hi. Thank you very much. Good day to you both. We have got the Dow, the S&P, NASDAQ all advancing. 59 minutes to go until the latest FOMC minutes. We've got the S&P pushing higher now, up by about 15 points. That is a gain of 0.3%. The Dow up 54, up by about 0.1%. NASDAQ up 123, now higher by about 0.6%. Our Mag 7 index rallying by 1%. An advance in several big tech names spurring a rebound in stocks. NVIDIA briefly hitting $4 trillion, the first company in history to achieve that milestone. Right now, we do have NVIDIA at just about $3.995 billion. The S&P 500 index up by 13, gain there of 0.2%. We got the Dow up 43, up 1/10. NASDAQ again up by 0.6%. NVIDIA shares, by the way, they're surging 1.9%. 10-year, 4.36%. The 2-year, 3.87%. And spot gold up $9 the ounce, $33.11, while West Texas Intermediate crude up 0.6%, WTI $68.72 a barrel on crude oil. Merck has agreed to buy respiratory drug maker Verona Pharma for around $10 billion as part of its ongoing search for ways to fill the Keytruda-sized hole that will emerge over the next few years. Shares of Verona, they're surging now by 20.6%. Recapping, NVIDIA up 2%, S&P up 14, up 0.2%. Back we go to Washington. Balance of power continues. Once again, your hosts, Joe Matthew and Kaylee Lyons.
All right, Charlie Pellett, thank you so much. Watching Wall Street for us in New York, and we'll get back to Charlie for more on the Wednesday trade a little bit later on. It has been quite the item to be watching NVIDIA today. We've got our eyes on copper as well, pulling back from the news yesterday, a 50% tariff on copper, assuming that takes effect in August. Shares of Freeport-McMoRan relaxing as well. But Kaylee, we're looking at a new batch of letters as we were discussing here. We've got 7 so far today. Mm-hmm. Didn't the president promise another 10? How are we doing on the count?
I think we're at 21 in total if you count the 14 from Monday as well. But he also said more could come this afternoon.
Right.
So we can't necessarily let our guard down. But when we consider the 7 that we got today, we're looking at a 20% tariff on goods for the Philippines, 25 mm-hmm. for Brunei and Moldova, 30 for Algeria, Iraq, Libya, and Sri Lanka. Take all those countries together. The amount that we imported from them last year was less than $20 billion worth of goods.
So you wonder what's going on, because people thought we'd be talking about trade deals with the likes of India, Japan, and others that are not on this list. Of course, Japan was called out with its own letter on a 25% tariff, but there's no rhyme or reason to the timing on all of these, it seems.
Yeah, so let's try to get some more insight now and turn to Josh Wingrove, who, of course, covers the White House for us here at Bloomberg. He's with us in our Washington, D.C. studio. So, Josh, when we consider the countries that we're learning about, their relevance, frankly, in terms of the aggregate trade that they do with the United States, how should we be reading into this when the president suggested it wasn't just tariff letters that were going to hit this week, but deals? And we've heard of no such deals yet.
Well, I know Joe loves Libyan suits, so I'm sorry. those are up 30%.
Thank you for noticing.
They seem to be doing this regionally as they go through the about 5 dozen countries. They did that yesterday. We're expecting another batch this afternoon. We don't know how many as they go through. Of course, the big fish hanging out there is the EU. They haven't done anything on that, so we're waiting to see what happens there. But right now, you know, Trump is deflecting the criticism that his 90 days and 90 deals have never materialized by saying these are deals. He's just reissuing these numbers. And I think it's important to remember, if you were not watching on Monday or, you know, had other things on the go, the letters are fundamentally a delay. Mm-hmm. That's what they're doing. This is fireworks above a delay. He's extending till August 1st, and then allegedly won't move it again, although he said that 12 hours after indicating he might. And so potentially he could change his mind again, but the most recent statement is August 1st is firm. So these are the latest threats. These numbers are in line with the April 2nd threats that he made in earlier. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of pushing them to, you know, the nearest multiple round of five. Number. Right, exactly. And then from there, they're going to, they do appear to be like grouping them regionally to some extent, but the White House has offered literally nothing publicly by the way of explaining how they're coming to these numbers. Yeah. So the initial numbers were, you know, a very crude formula on trade deficits. These ones are just seem to be
plucking this out of the air.
Yeah.
What do we buy?
Your guess is literally as good as mine and
yeah, right.
where they're coming from.
This is a good exercise. What do we import from Brunei? What are we putting tariffs
That's
on?
That's a great question. That,
I don't, I mean, does this seem strange, the collection of countries that we're hearing about today?
Well, the way they came up with the formula, it captured, because it was focusing on trade deficits, it captured a lot of lower wage manufacturers of consumer goods. Mm-hmm. And those are not countries that they've been focusing talks on. So the letters are being more focused on the countries that they haven't been having talks in, with the notable exception, of course, of Japan and South Korea, who he began with. So,
and as the president
says,
these
are smaller fish
is
by design, in other words.
The letter is the same thing as a deal, he said yesterday.
Letter is the same thing as a deal. Now, the letters are all pro forma, and they include invitations to invest, we'll see, and, of course, also to negotiate. And so that might still happen. Trump seems to be holding open the door for some kind of deal. But if you were Brunei, for instance, or Libya or Iraq or one of the countries listed in the last 48 hours, you know, you maybe don't have a lot of more incentive than you did on April 3rd or April 10th to really come to the table and make concessions, in part because of those low trade volumes we talk about. But we're watching to see what do the South Koreans do. What do the Japanese do? They've got some important elections coming up later this month that, you know, is politically complicating things, one would imagine. And then, of course, that EU situation. That's really hanging out there. Remember, China was also in this group, but has been sort of pulled out from that. We're looking forward to that meeting that we don't know where it is, or at least I don't know yet where it is, next month with Greer, Bessent, and Lutnick, and their Chinese counterparts. We'll see where that goes. EU run is really hanging in the air.
Mm-hmm. Well, so it's one thing to consider the kind of country-level talks and tariffs. It's another to consider the sectoral tariffs. The president yesterday was talking about potentially 200% tariff on pharma, though that may be out a year or further to allow time for those supply chains to come to the U.S. No such time, it seems, is going to be allowed for copper. Though, the suggestion is that, too, could hit, if not end of this month, on August 1st.
That's right. Secretary Lutnick saying in the coming weeks on copper, we're waiting to see the text on that. That one seems pretty baked. He had talked about a 25% tariff on copper, but, of course, he imposed a 25% tariff on steel and aluminum and then doubled it to 50%. And it seems like he's doing the same thing with copper, where we're going to land at 50%. Copper is also sort of small volumes and concentrated on a particular handful of countries. So maybe there's a chance for some kind of deal there. But Trump has been fixated on this for a while. On pharma, the timeline there is so important, right? Mm-hmm. Trump talked about 12 or 18 months leeway. I believe it was Lutnick who said 2 years. So that's way down the line, but he's talking about a big number. So that one appears to be, at least for now, more bark than bite. Mm-hmm. Whereas with copper, we're expecting it imminently. Of course, the big question is that semiconductor one.
Yeah.
Not only when that's coming, what rate it will be, but how widely they will define semiconductors. You know, is that a full net, anything with a chip in it? Because that is a lot of stuff. And then we're talking about a tariff on every phone, computer, television, you know, every fun thing you buy at Best Buy.
I know this is out of left field, but if you listen to that entire cabinet meeting, the last 15 minutes or so were about the interior decorating in the cabinet room and throughout the White House that the president was taking personal credit for and was deeply involved in touring those in the room through the presidential portraits, complete with his own kind of summary of what each president was known for, the gilding that we saw in some areas, the frames, the lamps, the medallions that he had added. And you wonder about his worldview from inside the White House when he talks about America being in the Gilded Age, another Golden Age, or Make America Great Again. Is this not informed by his actual surroundings inside the mansion?
Well, let me add, if you open the curtains behind him that you're looking at, you would see a rose garden that's being torn up.
Right,
What
do you make of
that? He's making changes.
You've covered multiple administrations.
He's putting his stamp on it. Well, President Biden did not affix gold to the fireplaces.
He didn't.
President Trump has affixed gold to the fireplaces. He's making it look more and more like Mar-a-Lago. I mean, anyone who's seen photos of Trump since the 80s knows he loves that kind of look and that kind of gold situation. So that's where he is. But, you know, he's definitely more comfortable, it seems, in the White House than he was in the first term and is making these changes up to and including, we saw earlier this month, the announcement of a UFC fight at some point on the grounds.
It's going to be a riot.
Of the White House. So, I don't know, we'll see.
You're going to have a front row seat to that,
we'll see about that. I was joking last night about whether that will decide the Fed chair. We'll see. You know, probably not. Probably not. But this made-for-TV quality of Donald Trump persists.
Amazing.
That is like the least newsy statement I can make,
yes,
I think.
Well,
but he continues to do that. But yeah, he's pretty proud of the change in the cabinet room. It is what it is.
Thank you, Josh.
Yes. Got those great big flags on the North and South Lawn as well.
They're really big flags.
They're so
They're very big.
They're
yes.
really large flags.
Like you see on the auto mile.
Yeah.
Are those flags too big to tariff? Or is that just
that's a fair question. I think those are made in the USA.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Josh Wingrove, we thank you as always. Bloomberg White House correspondent. Can we get to the panel here, you think?
I think we should, right. Yeah.
Lonnie Chen is with us, Jeannie Shanzano, Bloomberg Politics contributor, and of course, a senior democracy fellow with the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress. Lonnie is our Republican strategist and fellow in American Public Policy Studies at the Hoover Institution. It's great to have both of you here. Lonnie, your take on the trade policy, if there is one, or is this a president who's making this up as he goes?
Well, look, I think it's all about the deals, right? And that has always, I think, from day one, been the modus operandi of the president and the White House is to be able to talk about deals, announcing deals. And, you know, in many of these situations, what we really see is a little bit more buffer to get to deals. Now, the particular countries announced today, I don't necessarily think that whether we have a bilateral deal with Sri Lanka is going to make or break our trade deficit. But certainly, you know, I think about the bigger countries like Japan and Korea, where the situation started off very optimistically. If you look back to when we were first talking about doing trade deals with a number of different countries, Japan and Korea were often named as two countries that we thought right out of the gate would get good treatment initially. And we've seen now that those negotiations are dragging a bit. So I really see these letters in some ways as an invitation to really come to the table just one last time. And let's see what comes of it. I do tend to think that we will see progress made, particularly with Japan and Korea. But it'll be interesting to see. There's a few other countries. We don't have a lot of clarity on the European Union yet. We don't have clarity on Taiwan yet. So there's still some countries where I'm waiting to see what comes of the president's announcements in the next couple hours, I guess, here on July 9th.
Okay, so Lonnie sees these letters as an invitation to come to the negotiating table to try to make a deal. Jeannie, the president characterizes these letters as deals in and of themselves. Can we really say that an agreement has been made between the U.S. and any of these countries who are on the receiving end?
I like the way President Trump does things. I want to tell people I'm negotiating with, listen, I'll send you a letter, and then that's pretty much it. The negotiation is over. Of course not. You know, and as Lonnie mentioned, even on the two where we were told there was a deal, Great Britain and Vietnam, we still don't have a deal. It's more of like a promise for future talks. So, or we don't have the details, I should say. You know, I think when we look at the president's policy here, we have to judge it based on the way the administration says it should be judged. And they have talked about all of these goals, from reshoring to protection of national security to raising revenue. And Scott Bessent talked yesterday about the fact that a lot of revenue has been raised so far, and he's absolutely right. But most economists tell us that that'll be short-lived. And of course, any revenue coming in the long term is a tax on Americans, and it's a regressive tax on lower income Americans. So by that one measure that they themselves set out, this policy is very, very troubling, particularly from a president who's touting a win on the big, beautiful bill because it cuts taxes. And yet on the flip side, with all of these tariffs, he is raising taxes on Americans who simply cannot afford them. And so from that perspective, I call foul on all of this. And you can look at the other four goals, and he's not doing much better on those either.
Lonnie, the market had a bit of a hiccup yesterday when the tariffs were first announced, or the letters started going out. The 50% copper tariff hit the tape as well. We're coming back today. And the fact of the matter is, we're not that far from all-time highs. I mean, you look at the S&P 500, still well above 6,200 right now. And there is this thought, the taco trade, if you want to call it that, the boy who cried tariff. Is Wall Street smart to just start ignoring this?
Well, I think you're seeing that market behavior already. I mean, if you look back to some of the pullbacks we had post-Liberation Day, there was some real concern that these tariffs might be quite high in their percentage. They might be quite broadly applied. They might be applied to some critical industries. And little by little, we've seen some of that posture change. And I think markets are reacting to the fact that the president, at the end of the day, is behaving on all of these things in a pretty rational way, understanding that there are significant implications to significant tariffs, particularly on major trading partners. Now, we'll see. There are some things. He talked about sectoral tariffs, for example, of 200% on pharmaceuticals. If that were to really come into play, that would be a significant challenge for the life sciences sector. I think there's a question about whether that's real or just talk at this point. But so far, at least, I think what markets have seen is, yes, the president likes tariffs. Yes, he likes to talk about them. Yes, there's a way in which he's looking to put tariffs on a broad variety of countries and industries. But at the end of the day, there is a level of rationality, whether you want to chalk that up to what the president's doing or to what Secretary Bessent, who I think is a great advisor on a lot of these things, whoever it is or whatever it is, I think markets have kind of taken stock of this and said, listen, we just don't think that the downside scenario that some had talked about is all that likely. And I think that's why people are maybe exuberant, perhaps irrationally so now, given that we've got several more years of the Trump show.
Well, and when we consider that downside scenario, Jeannie, does that heighten the risk that markets could actually be caught off guard when the president decides, okay, actually, I'm not punting again. This is a hard deadline. These tariffs are real.
Yeah, there is a chance. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but there is a chance because the way I read what's happening is that the markets, like the rest of us, we put in, one deadline, scratch it off. You put in another one, scratch it off. I mean, we were all prepared today to be talking about July 9th, this big deadline. And of course, then it was moved. And so the markets seem to be expecting that this is going to probably move again. And maybe they're right about that. And that is, makes sense. But if he decides to keep with this August 1st deadline, hopefully they're not caught off guard, but he could actually do that. And the reality is that if he's talking about targeted tariffs, that might be one thing, but he hasn't been doing that. And he needs to be very clear with the goal here, and he hasn't been on that either.
All right, Jeannie Shanzano and Lonnie Chen, our political panel on this Wednesday. Thank you so much. Of course, Wednesday, July 9th, not the day we all necessarily thought it would be as we look ahead now to August 1st. We'll have more ahead here on Balance of Power on Bloomberg TV and radio.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
As we consider the idea of a 50% tariff on copper against the backdrop of these tariff letters that have been going out to individual countries, and as we've told you, seven more went out today to the likes of Libya, Iraq, and the Philippines. We add the voice of Heather Boucher to the conversation, not a stranger to Stephen Miron's job. She was, of course, a member of the White House Council of Economic Advisors as deputy director under President Joe Biden, currently senior research fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School. Heather, it's great to see you. Welcome back to Bloomberg TV and radio. We'd like to hear from you broadly on the trade policy or lack thereof that we're seeing in the last 24 to 48 hours. But I'm curious your thoughts specifically on copper and the impact that a 50% tariff would have on our economy. What would this look like?
Well, listen, I mean, the chaos continues. I think that, it's really hard to listen to the current CA chair talk about the kind of economy that President Trump wants to see, but how chaotic this implementation is and how it doesn't make sense in terms of spurring the kind of investment that we need to see all across the United States. I think, you see these price spikes because the president is saying that he's going to impose, new tariffs on copper at this point. But A, we don't know whether or not that's going to stick. And B, that makes it so difficult for investors all across the country and for businesses to make plans. And as the previous segment pointed out, it's very difficult for industries that actually build things to turn on a dime in the way that the president seems to want them to do. Again, the chaos doesn't help, but even if you said, we want you to all change your supply chains overnight, the world just doesn't work that way. These are, they have to be built, you have to figure out all of your new suppliers, you have to make sure that you can produce domestically. And the president, with the other, you know, part of his policy agenda, is stripping our ability to make those investments. You know, we saw the passage of the Republican budget bill that is actually making cutbacks in the kinds of investments around the country that would create those stable incentives for investment. So, you know, what I see is a chaotic implementation of a plan that is not leading to economic outcomes that the president has promised and are likely to lead to more chaos, less domestic production in things that really matter, as businesses just can't quite sort out what the heck he's thinking.
Well, Heather, another economic outcome it hasn't necessarily led to, at least yet, that was expected, is materially higher inflation. And I ask this knowing we're getting a CPI report next week, and the chair of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, has suggested it's this summer that he believes the effect of tariffs will start showing up in price data. Do you expect we start to see that next week? When does it hit?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Certainly, if you're adding on these tariffs onto the things that people are buying, then prices are going to go up. The question is, you know, how soon will that happen? As you noted, people expected that that would start to really be binding in the summer. But it does really depend on whether or not these tariffs stick and where they stick and how much of those costs are passed on to consumers. Given the direction of the economy and all of the concerns that we're seeing from all of the different kinds of soft data, you know, the consumer surveys, the business surveys, it seems like people all across America, consumers, families, businesses, CEOs, are very worried about the direction. So that probably means that they might be holding back. Maybe firms might not increase prices so quickly because they're a little bit afraid of losing their customers, but maybe they will. And we know that these tariffs will lead to probably a one-time increase in prices, and we're likely to see the effects of that, you know, coming down the pipeline. But again, it all hinges on whether or not, you know, the president actually makes it stick. I think one of the longer-term implications is what this does to investment and jobs all across the country, that affects the long-term prices that families see on the things that they buy. And I think that chaos is going to be with us for a long time.
All right. Heather Boucher, formerly of the White House Council of Economic Advisors during the Biden administration. All right, Heather, thank you so much for joining us. Heather Boucher, formerly of the White House Council of Economic Advisors during the Biden administration, now with the Harvard Kennedy School.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
There's a very good chance of a Gaza agreement as soon as this week, knowing he's fresh off of two consecutive nights or afternoons of meetings with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House.
With no news, we didn't even see the arrivals on either of those evenings, brought Benjamin Netanyahu in through the side West Wing entrance, the driveway entrance where press photographers cannot see or reporters cannot shout questions. To my knowledge, Kaylee, unless you saw one, there was no readout from the White House on this meeting, and we didn't hear one from Netanyahu's office as well. So it's curious. They were supposed to be talking, to your point, about a ceasefire in Gaza. There's been a lot of reporting that they've been talking about Iran, knowing that there could be further strikes against Iran in lieu of a deal.
Yeah, so we want to get into both of those issues now as we turn to Hagar Shamali, former director for Syria and Lebanon at the National Security Council, now founder and CEO of Greenwich Media Strategies. Hagar, thank you for being with us. As the president suggests, there could actually be movement on a ceasefire this week, knowing we have been here time and again before. What odds would you put around that?
Well, as you mentioned, we've been here before, but the reason I would put good odds on this one is because you are hearing a lot of positive openness to this from already, from the Prime Minister, from Prime Minister Netanyahu and the Israeli government. And there are a few reasons for that. And part of it is pressure that they're facing, but a lot of it is actually when you're following on the foot of the strikes that happened against the Iranian regime and its nuclear program, you're essentially following a strategy where Iran is being put in a box and then you pivot to moving ahead on other things. And that's why you're also seeing talks between Syria and Israel move quickly. So in light of that, right after that, Trump also himself has chips that he can call on right now with Netanyahu and say, look, you know, we were there for you. We came in and we helped you with those strikes. And now you're going to need to go to this. Now, agreeing, there's another part of this, and that's that agreeing to a ceasefire, which is temporary, is easier for Netanyahu than the second part, which is agreeing to an end to the war. And that's where Trump wants to go, is to get to this so that he can take those 60 days to negotiate the end of the war. Netanyahu doesn't want to get there. He wants to leave the window open to continue attacking Hamas and undermining them. And so that in Netanyahu's mind, it's easier to, at least if he's going to curry favor with Trump, to agree to that temporary ceasefire and kick the can down the road on the end of the war. And so that's why I have some hope that this might actually come through. Hmm.
What do you make of the silence surrounding these meetings, Hagar? The fact that we're not hearing any communications from either government about what was discussed. Didn't see him coming or going either.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's interesting. I mean, from what I've heard from my White House friends, the meetings have gone well. Obviously, they obviously also chose to put out there the offer of, or the fact that Netanyahu nominated President Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize, right? So they put that part out in the press. I've actually seen this a lot as well just in Lebanon. Now, Tom Barrack was in Lebanon, and he chose not to comment on the negotiations between the United States and the Lebanese government on the disarmament of Hezbollah. And he actively said, I'm not going to talk about it in the public because I don't want to undermine the negotiating process. So that's, you know, it could only, in my mind, it only highlights the seriousness of it, but also perhaps that they don't want the media opining, debating, undermining anything. They want it to be in secret and then to come out public with it. And to be fair, by the way, that's how they pursued the Abraham Accords, Trump 1.0. Mm. They were very secretive about it. Abraham is different, obviously, but they were very secretive about it until coming out with something real. And so I think it's part of that view, is they don't want anything to leak or to be distorted, and they don't want to chase a narrative that they themselves haven't shaped.
So do you think, Hagar, that they'll wait to actually come out with a deal announcement until both Israel and Hamas have signed on? Because typically, and this was true of the Biden administration as well, you get the announcement that one party has agreed and then the other one isn't necessarily on board and the whole thing falls apart.
That's right. Well, it's hard to predict exactly how they'll do it. They don't do it the same every time. But I will say that there's a lot of the discussions they're having are so detailed. So, for example, when they talk about the disarmament of Hamas specifically, and it's to this detail. Well, how are they gonna monitor that? Who's gonna enforce that? Are there gonna be troops on the ground? If Israel is withdrawing from parts of Gaza in exchange for this ceasefire, what parts specifically? They're not going to let go of the Philadelphia corridor. That's the border, for example, between Gaza and Egypt. But there's a lot of discussion of how far they'll retreat to, like, how far into the barrier or the barrier that's being built, that perimeter around between Israel and Gaza. But at the same time, you just had an attack that happened yesterday that was in that perimeter where you had five IDF soldiers, I believe, who died and 14 that were wounded, something like that. And so that, again, that in the wake of that, that's not going to bode well for Israel agreeing to those specific details. But when you're talking about figuring those details out, that's what makes it so difficult. But I do think that, as per usual, they're going to have an interest. If Israel agrees to this deal, the U.S. is going to have an interest in saying that Israel agreed to it and that the ball is in Hamas's court. So that's kind of how I expect it to usually go.
Hagar, does any of this work as long as President Trump has a vision of Gaza being turned into a Mediterranean resort town?
I think that, again, this one is something that, this is where you're going to see the biggest gap and the between the Israeli government and the U.S. government, is that Trump has a goal to end this war specifically, and that's where what he wants to use the, if they agree to this temporary ceasefire, he wants to use those 60 days to get to that. And Netanyahu's made it clear. Now, again, there are many different elements of a deal that might get him to agree to something. But at the end of the day, he doesn't want Hamas to govern Gaza. Hamas has indicated openness to not governing Gaza and to a different government coming in, except the question is, would Hamas secretly be behind that government? Netanyahu also doesn't want the Palestinian Authority being part of that new government in Gaza. It's a policy to continue keeping Gaza and the West Bank separated because he doesn't want to move toward two states. And so now the Trump administration also has not made it clear that that's what they're headed toward. They just want an end to the war. But that gap, that is going to continue being a gap. I wouldn't mistake that chasm for undermining the relationship between Trump and Netanyahu. Trump is actually quite honest. When he's upset with Netanyahu, he says it. When he's happy with him, he says it. So I wouldn't view it as something that would undermine the relationship, but I think it's gonna be a gap that continues until Netanyahu himself feels that he has undermined Hamas enough or that he has retained some kind of capability where the Israeli government can continue going after Hamas terrorist activity as they see it.
Hagar, it's great to have you back. Hagar Shamali, former director for Syria and Lebanon on the National Security Council, knows what she talks about, now founder of Greenwich Media Strategies. It's great to have you with us as part of our conversation on Bloomberg TV and radio. Kaylee, you do wonder if we're going to hear something more about this conversation or maybe news of another meeting. We did, in fact, to Hagar's point, we did see Benjamin Netanyahu. They held a luncheon, brought some reporters in the room 2 days ago. But yeah, when he returned for the evening meetings, we never saw the two together.
Yeah. And of course, it's not just meetings at the White House we're referring to. He's met with the defense secretary, Pete Hegseth. Right. He met with leadership in Congress yesterday as well. So spending a lot of time here in Washington, we'll see ultimately if a ceasefire is the end result. That's one thing we'll be watching for between now and 5 p.m. when we return to air. The other is more tariff letters. The president suggested Brazil could come today.
Thanks for listening to the Balance of Power podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us live every weekday from Washington, D.C. at noontime Eastern at Bloomberg.com.